Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
Circuit Court did dismiss the litigation filed by the, or directed to be filed by the prior council against the mayor. I'm sorry that didn't get dismissed sooner, but it was dismissed. Sometimes the wheels of justice or the court system move slowly. So there is still an appeal in the First District Court of Appeal. I'm sure that'll be dismissed in the next couple of days, and then this litigation will be forever concluded.
The dismissal of the lawsuit by the city against you for the public records is irrelevant to my public records request for the public records that Judge Duncan ruled as such on January 31st. So it's irrelevant that they chose not to pursue those public records. But that doesn't mean that those public records don't exist and that the judge ruled them as public records.
All right, this is going to be a five-part series today, but we only have three parts to do. So I'm going to try to get it all in. This is the Milton City Council meeting from not quite a month ago, and it's important to understand that this is the setup for what's going to come in subsequent episodes today. But the strident voice you hear is Howard Steele. Howard Steele was a candidate for County Commission District 2. He did not win against Kerry Smith. Kerry Smith is now the chairman of the board. Howard Steele sits on two boards on the city. Both of the, well, that fact in particular is going to become very relevant to later elements. But you remember the lawsuit that the former city council filed against Mayor Heather Lindsay after she repeatedly refused to disclose her full public records after Alex Andrade, at least five times by my count, pleaded with her, please don't force us to sue you. Please just give us your records. And she wouldn't. Finally, the city had to file this lawsuit because, you know, it's going to cost money to do that. The city was winning. The judge had decided that there were all kinds of public records that she had not disclosed. And the city was winning. And then we got a new board and new city council in. The new city council allies with the Pitchfork Posse, the Blackwater River folks, and allies with Heather Lindsay. And they all decided as a group, except for just a couple, to drop the lawsuit on the verge of winning it, which meant costing the city all the money they had spent and not pursuing legal fees from Heather Lindsay's side, which they likely would have gotten, and also leaving God knows how many. I mean, it's 300 items, but each item has multiple public records in it that she had disputed whether they were public records or not. And in the end, we did get a bulk of records that were very boring, but there's still a whole bunch of records out there that we'll never get at this point unless somebody like a Howard Steele or another private citizen decides to pick up the lawsuit. That's what this is all about. So John Adams is saying that he's the new city attorney. He's saying that, look, the court dismissed. We finally got this all done. Should be over and done with completely here shortly. Howard Steele says the dismissal is irrelevant to my records request because the same exact request doesn't have to come from the city. It can come from a private citizen.
Will you voluntarily release those records to the public so that we can examine the public records that Judge Duncan has ruled as public records? Will you voluntarily release those records to the public?
I believe that as part of the litigation being concluded.
The litigation is irrelevant. I'm not talking about the litigation between you and the city.
Why don't you reach out to my attorney?
No, I'm not. I'm asking you as the city mayor that has public records that Judge Duncan has ruled as public record.
Well, sir, I respectfully disagree with your assessment.
Well, did he rule those as public record or not public record?
It was a preliminary order that allowed for questioning, and those questions were raised in good faith.
But he ruled those records as public records, and you did not release 315 of those records. So it's irrelevant that the city doesn't want you to release those records, but the public can still request those records.
I disagree with your assessment of the situation.
Are they public records or are they not public records? Did the judge... There's no point of order if I'm standing up here. If there's no public point of order.
Mr. Steele, members of the public...
Thank you, please, for addressing them.
Members of the public, Mr. Steele is allowed his 3 minutes.
Good times at the city council meeting. What Heather Lindsay wants to claim is that the judge was just giving a preliminary ruling. No, the judge read the records. In camera is what it's described. He read the records and he decided these are public, these are not. And there were also some which were uncertain, which he acknowledged were, I'm not sure if these are public records or not. But the ones that are public records, those are the ones, at least some of them, she did release eventually in the settlement with the city, but some of which, the 300 plus, again, documents, not particular messages, so we don't really know how many messages were in there, that were never released because she objected to them. Now, it's true you can appeal the judge's ruling, but this was not some just preliminary, man, I think these might be. The judge said those are records. Now, she disagreed. But it's not like some maybe. It was a disputed ruling, but he did rule that. If you read what he wrote, those were public records, and she didn't give them up. Now, this one, this is longer, but just for your enjoyment. This is about a minute and a half, 2 minutes long, but I know it's a 5 o'clock hour. I know it's early, but a lot of you listen on the podcast, so welcome if you're listening on the podcast. And again, this is actually just the setup for what's going to come in the next meeting. This is all just like preamble, because what's going to happen in the next meeting is honestly amazing. But you have to kind of know this story in order to get the next story, if that makes sense.
I don't agree with you using your 3 minutes to engage with me in a back and forth. That's not
what it's my 3 minutes, but I'm not. You don't have to qualify my 3 minutes. I'm not asking you to qualify.
I'm asking you.
Did the judge?
Our rules of decorum.
I am. I'm not exceeding my 3 minutes, and I'm asking you. This is city. I'm not. You're right, because I'm speaking. I'm speaking. Did Judge Duncan? Did Judge Duncan rule those records as being public records? Yes, he did.
He made a preliminary order designating some records public.
That's correct. And you have not released those records.
And through my lawyers, we made objections to some of his designations. Mm-hmm.
And those objections were not heard by the Court of Appeal, correct? So those records are still deemed as public record. The city just chose not to pursue those records. That does not negate the fact that they are public records and they belong to the public. And the public can demand those records through the court, correct?
Sir.
Regardless of the city. The city doesn't have to get involved. Gray Robinson does not have to get involved.
Yeah, and by the way, that's an important point he's making, is that the judge had ruled, she had appealed, then the city dropped the lawsuit. So we didn't get an evidentiary hearing on whether the records that were already ruled public records are in fact public records. It's not like she won, right?
Sir, I hear you.
Will you release those records? Will you release those records to the city, please?
I've already explained to you my position on this.
So you will not release the records that Judge Duncan has ruled as public record?
I disagree with your assessment of the situation, sir.
So do you disagree with Judge Duncan's assessment that they are public records? Because that is what he ruled.
I have released my public records already, sir.
No, ma'am, you have not.
That is your opinion, sir.
No, she has not.
It is not my opinion when the court has ruled that those records be public and you did not release all of them. If the judge ruled 100 records and you only released 90, that means there's remainder of 10. You did not release all the records. Thank you.
That's correct. Howard Steele has it exactly right. Okay. Oh, by the way, time. I think that was my cue sack. It's always hard to tell. First of all, the video that they put up, it's like from a distance. So even if you think, it's hard to tell who's speaking sometimes, so I do occasionally get it wrong. I try to go by voice identification, which is almost always right, but not always right. Anyway, so John Adams, who is the new city attorney, is going to jump in here and give a little bit of, try to do a little spackle on this discussion and try to fix it for the city. I also disagree with, I think I disagree with John Adams' assessment as well, but okay, here goes.
Judge Duncan said repeatedly, both in hearings and written orders, that what the court did was make a preliminary, that means a very early, not a final determination as to what the court believed were public records and the court believed were not public records. The court further, in very painstaking detail, said that there were lots of questions that the court had about would have to be answered prior to the court to make a determination of what was public records.
Yeah, see, that's no. I mean, that's not what the judge said. If you read the order, the in-camera order on in-camera review of documents, this was January. In part two, it says the court has reviewed all the records submitted by Heather Lindsay. The court will note the number of text messages within these records could exceed over 100,000. The court attaches a spreadsheet with its findings. A Y designation means the document is a public record. An N means the designation is not a public record. Some of the documents have portions that are a public record with other portions of the document not being a public record. The court designation of these portions are identified on the spreadsheet and uses the designation YN to indicate which documents contain both public and non-public. The court has specifically stated which portions of the communications are public record and those are not. This nonsense about it as a preliminary judgment is false. There's none of that. I mean, it's just, he even goes on to explain that, you know, personal opinions about city council and other staff and political things are, you know, may or may not be. So it, but he specifically identified, we looked at all of them. These are, these aren't, these might be. So there's no unclarity other than what he allows are the ones that he admits are not clear. But those are not the ones that Heather Lindsay has not revealed. Now, keep in mind, through all of this, through $60,000 worth of legal fees by the city and who knows how many legal fees by Heather Lindsay, what must be in these documents that are so eager, so important for her not to disclose? Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's really amazing. Anyway, so John Adams again.
Say it was never determined they weren't public records. It's probably not 100% correct because the court emphatically determined a ton of the documents were not public records. And so this small, very small subset, the court said, these may be public records. Preliminarily, I'm going to say they are, but I want the parties to get together, see if you can agree. If not, we're going to put on evidence, and I'll make a final determination. So sorry to not to give you a lawyer question to answer this late at night, but that's the best I think I can answer your question.
Well, I think that it, you know, Mr. Steele continues to come forward and say the 315 records were determined by the court to be public, and he didn't determine them one way or the other. So I just wanted that clarified.
Yeah, that's just false. That's false. There are ones that were not certain. There are other ones that were certain that the mayor disputed that when the case got dropped, those just went away. Those are the ones that we've never seen. And they are slopping over these distinctions in a very deceptive way. So that's the backdrop. Okay, that's like the setup. Then we flash forward. I'm just telling you, this is an amazing one to me. So we flash forward to the meeting that was about a week later, the work session. And in the work session, Mike Cusack, who is one of the key players in all of this, remember Mike Cusack had destroyed public records. Mike Cusack had an ethics charge against him. Mike Cusack said that he knew what the public records rules were, which he clearly did not. He's the one who said, if you want my public records, you can get a court order and come get them. Bro, you don't need a court order for a public. Well, you shouldn't normally. Apparently in Milton, you do. Anyway, so he brought up an agenda item of how much is all of this costing the city.
Councilman Cusack requested this to be on there. I sent an email out with these numbers a week or so ago. I didn't know if you had any discussion you wanted to.
I hope everybody looked and seen what this lawsuit that was put forth by the majority of the former city council that this council voted to make it go away. We spent $68,930 of taxpayer money for nothing.
For nothing. It's not actually true to say for nothing, because you did get in the settlement with Mayor Lindsay a bunch of her public records that are, like I said, I thought they were very boring. They were not the important ones. So it didn't get nothing. But also, you can't say you got nothing when it was your choice to drop the lawsuit that resulted in getting nothing. That you were winning, that you almost certainly would have won, that almost certainly would have granted you legal fees compensation back. So you abandoned the opportunity to get the $69,000 paid for by the other side, by Heather Lindsay's side, and you abandoned the effort to get the rest of the public records. So, you know, the for nothing comes because of a choice that you made.
We just weren't, you know, it's not good stewards of the citizens of Milton, because it served no purpose other than, I think, what Robert, you said, it was more vindictive than it was anything else. It was propagated by our former city attorney with another city council person that was the hard charger on this one.
Well, yeah, but it was directed by the city council in a vote of, if I remember correctly, 6-2. You and Marilyn Farrell were voting against it. So it was the directive of the city council to do this. Okay, so here's where it gets kind of interesting. There was a follow-up suit from, remember the guy who was yelling a minute ago, Howard Steele?
And anyway, after we made the move to dismiss it, voted to make it go away, there was further litigation put forth by, anybody has the right to do anything they want to do as far as suing anybody, or I have no issue with that. The issue was we spent $3,541 due to litigation put forth by a member, current member of two city boards.
That's Howard Steele.
Mr. Howard Steele. He put forth a further litigation that was basically found had no merit.
So Howard Steele put forward subsequent litigation to disclose those records. That got shelved, and Mike Cusack is angry that the city spent $3,500 defending against that particular litigation, and raises the question, well, look, if he's on two boards of the city and he's filing a lawsuit against the city, should we maybe not take him off the boards?
Mike, I just want to bring conversation here with the council that, do you think that somebody that's as representative of the city boards should remain on the city board by costing us $3,500 in legal fees for nothing?
So is it not our opportunity to retaliate against Howard Steele and shove him off these boards because he made a decision? I mean, I know anybody can sue for us for any reason. I'm totally fine with that. Just not if they're on one of our boards and if we don't like him. We're going to think about punishing him by kicking him off these boards. So, yeah, this is going to get very interesting. We'll follow up on this next hour. Stick around. Episode 2 is coming. I mean, come on. I only have so much time.
No.
Only so much time.
Here. I control the board so we can just keep going.
I'm Andrew McKay.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting truly great candidates for your roles? It seems impossible to find them, but they have to be out there somewhere, right? Well, they're not hard to find when you know where to go, and that place is ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day. And because these people are actively looking for jobs just like yours, it's easy to find the right person right away. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're missing out. So see what it's like when the impossible is easy. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/free. ZipRecruiter.com/free. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
Celebrating 15 years of excellence, Nancy's Catering and Events has been feeding Pensacola's most unforgettable occasions since 2010. Led by award-winning executive chef Gus Silivos, Nancy's team brings top culinary creations and guest experiences to the Gulf Coast area. From lavish weddings and galas to seaside crab boils and garden parties, Nancy's has you covered. For more information and to see the array of menus and services, visit nancyscateringandevents.com. Nancy's Catering and Events, where your perfect event begins.
Hey, Pensacola pet parents. Got questions about your fur babies? Well, I'm Dr. Mark Sprayberry, owner of Olive Branch Pet Hospital. I would like to invite you and your friends to tune in to the all-new Pet Talk, where I'll be answering all your questions live on air. Tune in today at 9:30. See you groovy people then.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
News Radio Pensacola has a team of experienced and award-winning journalists dedicated to bringing you the most accurate and up-to-date news coverage. Informative, local, dependable.
I hate to say I told you so.
Well, now don't lose your head, son. We still got a lot of boogieing to do.
Now put the pedal to the metal. I'm 10-10 on the side.
By sure. Me and Fred here, we got your back door, Hammer Fred. Ow.
I love the look of just utter contentment, bliss, reminiscing, happiness on John Pickens' face when I play Smoke in the Bandit clips.
The best movie ever.
We just recently rewatched that as well. So, you know, that movie has got a lot of swearing in it.
It does.
And Jackie Gleason, who has all the best lines in that movie.
Oh, my goodness. Such a great job.
There's a lot of those lines. I'm like, I can't use that. I can't use that. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Was there ever a better sidekick than the snowman, though?
Oh, snowman's great.
Never.
Isn't he great?
Never, ever.
President Trump is now banned to travel from 12 countries, citing security risks. Multiple reports say the proclamation will fully restrict and limit the entry of people from these 12 countries. The list includes Iran, Haiti, Somalia, and Sudan. And people from 7 countries will have partial restrictions. That includes Cuba and Venezuela.
Yeah, after the horrible attack in Boulder by an illegal immigrant or somebody who overstayed his visa. And, you know, he was from Egypt. And that was part of the premise for this ban on these 19 countries, hard on some, soft on others, none of which is Egypt. Go on, David.
Well, here's one to make you sleep good at night. Health officials are now tracking the spread of measles through wastewater. A program called Wastewater Scan, which was first used during the COVID pandemic, is monitoring water in all 40 states. They say it's helping to detect outbreaks of measles cases across the country.
It turns out to be weirdly one of the most accurate ways to track these things.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop. President Trump orders a probe into whether aides to former President Biden hid any decline in his mental health, including the use of the auto pen for executive orders and pardons. And now, for the first time, the former president himself is pushing back.
Biden responded to those allegations in a new statement saying he knew what he was doing. Quote, let me be clear. I made the decisions during my presidency. I made the decisions about the pardons, executive orders, legislation, and proclamations. Any suggestion that I didn't is ridiculous and false.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson, a full travel ban for a dozen countries straight from President Trump.
We will not allow people to enter our country who wish to do us harm.
7 out of the nations will have partial restrictions. The new Chancellor of Germany at the White House today on the menu, a trade deal in ending Russia's war in Ukraine. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. And right now we've got 75 degrees. It is partly cloudy in Pensacola this morning. A family that fell victim to a home rental scam in Foley is now running out of time to find a new place to live. That family includes a 29-year-old quadriplegic man. They say they just need more time to find somewhere to go.
Basically, got shim-shammed on this home. We lost all our money. We have a quadriplegic son, lost it all. We can't just jump and go. You have to give us some time.
And the family members spoke with Channel 3. They had just moved into the home after making a deal on Facebook Marketplace. They said they paid over $2,000 deposit for the home, but apparently the deal was fraudulent. They found out last week that they will have to move. Wednesday, the victim was detained and nearly arrested as a squatter. There's more on that story on Channel 3. They say they've raised some money now through a GoFundMe to help with their moving expenses. Florida lawmakers began negotiations to finalize the state budget for the upcoming fiscal year. After a month-long stalemate, primarily over tax cuts, the House and Senate now are both working through differences in areas like health services, education, and environmental funding. Key issues include varying proposals for higher education funding. The Senate suggesting $350 million for performance-based incentives. The House proposing $250 million. Additionally, some disagreements persist over the Family Empowerment Scholarship Program and funding for citrus research, as well as allocations for Everglades projects. Their goal, to get an agreement by June 16th to allow time for the governor to review and sign the budget. Well, Pensacola city officials looking into the cost of putting on parades downtown, especially after some low turnout this year for the Fiesta Parade.
But the vast majority of putting out barricades, police and fire, all of those things that just got even more expensive with additional security are at the feet of the city. And remember, if there's bed tax generated or anything like that, that's not going to the city.
And that is Pensacola Mayor D.C. Reeves. He said one option could be to look into lower cost route options, such as running the parades on Bayfront Parkway instead of the normal route on Garden and Palafox. Reeves says that would mean less costs for security. After work begins, he said, on the reimagined Palafox project next year, they'll likely move the parades, and it could be a good test run for future parade routes. Well, two people were killed when a crane collapsed on Merritt Island Wednesday. The Brevard County Sheriff's Office says the accident happened at the construction site of the new Cape Canaveral Hospital. The cause of that collapse is still under investigation, but storms were in the area at the time. Weather radars report heavy wind gusts around that time. It's 6:35 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 75 degrees and partly cloudy skies. Our next news at 6. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Citigroup says it plans to cut around 3,500 technology jobs in China before the start of the fourth quarter. The jobs affected are mostly in the Information Technology Services Unit. Some of the roles will be moved to Citi's technology centers elsewhere. A panel of judges have denied Apple's emergency application to halt changes to its App Store that resulted from the company's legal battle with Epic Games. The ruling in the case means Apple can no longer charge a commission on payment links inside its apps, nor tell developers how the links should look. Developers, including Amazon and Spotify, have been able to update their apps to avoid Apple's 15 to 30% commission. Low-cost e-commerce giants Temu and Shein have slowed significantly in the U.S. amid tariffs and the closure of the de minimis loophole. Sensor Tower data says Temu's U.S. daily active users dropped by 52% in May versus March, while Shein's were down 25%. The drop-off comes as both Temu and Shein have pulled back on U.S. advertising spending. Futures are slightly higher. That's Your Money Now.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Mom, can we have some ice cream?
I've got a better idea. Who wants to help me make something fun and healthy instead?
Me! Eating smarter is easy and delicious. Interested in receiving healthy recipes and a whole lot more in your email? Then register at healthiestweightfl.com and learn more about all the small steps that you can take on the way to living healthy. This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the Florida Department of Health, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more on News Radio Pensacola.
I have to tell you, as a council member, as a citizen who has natural gas currently, I will never support an increase that goes to pay this back. Charging unlawful taxes, but continuing to do that, I think is just wrong. I know we're not charging it now, but maybe we need to tighten our belts and not transfer so much out, because that may end anyway if the legislature has its way. This lawsuit has resulted in a flagrant violation of our commitment to the citizens of the city of Pensacola. And I want to apologize to the citizens who have been wronged by this. Kind of apologizing myself because I've been wronged by it as well. The citizens affected by the failure of this government to do what's right.
City Council Member Charles Baer, I do think it's hilarious that he's apologizing to himself in the apology. It makes me laugh every time. But talking about this settlement that's being paid to Pensacola Energy customers, city residents, $16 million almost, a little shy of, in relation to a lawsuit that alleged that the franchise fees were illegally harvested because they were not eligible to be in place. And that's the ruling, and this is the settlement. And now the question is, what now? Because if that's going to come out of our surplus fund, how do we replenish that? And he says, I will not vote to raise rates to replenish that surplus fund. Well, then, okay, so how do you replenish the fund? Joining us now, Mayor D.C. Reeves. Mr. Mayor, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
Good morning. Okay, so I know Charles is just one of seven, okay, so he doesn't have a controlling vote, but It struck me from the very beginning that if you pay out $16 million, you're going to have to raise rates to offset not only the franchise fees that you're not collecting anymore, but also the payback to the savings account, basically, in order to get us back into a safe situation when it comes to any kind of emergency. But you're overseeing all of this. What's your plan?
Yeah. So, and first of all, obviously, you know, I respect all seven people up there, and that's the idea of a council, right, is having opinions that you agree with sometimes and disagree with sometimes. And I wish we were this passionate about solving this issue 8 years ago. That would have been way better for me, I can tell you that, and way better for our citizens. So, as I mentioned, I know you mentioned in the last hour, just to set perspective here, the second we had a problem, we diagnosed, solved, stopped charging the fee, and got us to finality. And if you understand much about this lawsuit, this is the better part of almost 15 years. And really longer than that, it trails back the history of this franchise. So this has been a generational lawsuit that we've gotten to some version of closure, whether we like it or not. It's just where things sit. So, it's kind of like saying you're going to take $16 million out of reserves and not replenish it in some way. It's kind of like saying we're going to stop charging property tax, but we expect no change to services, no change to Parks and Rec, no change to maintenance. I mean, it sounds good. It's a good soundbite, but it's not reality. And not only is it not reality, because if a hurricane were to hit us, God forbid, we'd probably be nice if our natural gas company had reserves. But secondly, there's statutory thing. I mean, there's legal requirements of this. This isn't even a preference thing of whether Councilman Bear or Mayor Reeves has differing opinions on the level of reserves. I mean, there's requirements. We are running an enterprise. We're running a utility. So I think a lot of this conversation is moot in the fact that, yes, we have to have reserves. And, we're going to do what we can to get it all adjusted. So, I'm very confident in our plan. Daryl Singleton does an amazing job running energy. And Amy LaVoy in our finance office. You know, I've taken their recommended best path forward, and that's what we're going to do. So I think we'll be just fine. And, again, hyperbole and facts sometimes get confused. And, we have to really, figure out our long-range plan to get this replenished and get us back to square one.
Yeah, several of the texts that I have gotten in this morning on the subject are basically, stop wasting money, tighten your belt, kind of what Charles Bear said, just, do better. And I always think, it's not like they're doing none of that now. it's not like there's just $16 million worth of, cheaper pencils available for Pensacola Energy to save money. So anyway, I'll look at the plan. I'm sure, as you said, John's got one, and, we'll see it rolled out. You guys had the first of two childcare summits, and in that, a lot of things came out of it. I didn't get a chance to watch it, so I'm kind of curious what some of the takeaways were. I know you talked about them a little bit yesterday, better wages, making it easier for people to start the business or to expand their business. But you also talked about, subsidy, like a plan or a program in Miami. Childcare is expensive and scarce, and it is sometimes the reason people don't work at all, because it's too expensive or too scarce to be able to get it. Mayor D.C. Reeves convened a childcare summit this last week. There's another one coming up. What did you learn?
Yeah, listen, I look at, if we think housing is the problem of yesterday, meaning we should be already on it and we can't build houses fast enough, I believe childcare access is the problem of tomorrow, because it's unavoidable. If we want workforce and we want to, take it all the way to the federal level, you want to talk about tariffs and you want to talk about creating jobs in the United States, all the way down to the micro level at municipality. Those people have children. Those children need to be cared for in a quality way, number one. And number two is, think about how much your government at every level spends to try to correct
inaction at third grade and fifth grade and eighth grade. It is wildly expensive to do it and not very successful.
What we've seen
is if a kid's ready for kindergarten, there's a real good chance they're going to graduate high school. And if they aren't ready for kindergarten, that it's going to be a struggle and they may or may not graduate high school. So I just think from an economic standpoint, from a workforce standpoint, and an education standpoint and quality of life, that attacking this child care issue is important. And I would say the couple takeaways: we had an amazing contingent of people from Miami-Dade County who've worked on it. Was kind of reassuring. They said, you know, this is the same conversation we just had 10, 15 years ago.
Okay.
In our city. And now they have these amazing problems, like they have so many people doing child care, but they want to just up the quality. That is not our situation. I believe we have 11 child care centers that get ELC funding inside the city limits. And so again, multiply that by kids and multiply that by how many children live here. And you know, there's some definite concern. So, you know, they have an amazing subsidy program where, you know, we have the same situation they had, which is here are these people watching our children, 0 years old, 1 year old, and the quality that it takes and that we all would expect to have. And when those people are making $14 an hour or $15 an hour, you can understand why there's lots of turnover, and it might be hard to find people that are going to go into this career and be in this career for a long time and become strong quality educators. So,
right.
So I think we have to help the individual, and I think we have to help the business. I think that's what we've really come up with, and we're going to meet on July 9th to start getting into tactics. But we don't have to reinvent the wheel. If Miami-Dade has figured out a way to do something, great. You know, that's proven and has a track record. So we're going to look at that, and the city's also going to look at potential infrastructure and facilities if we can take some buildings or some grant dollars and be able to put in childcare locations or help grow childcare locations across the city. We're going to look at that as well. So more to come on July, but that's the you know, respecting the employee, respecting the business itself was probably a good general overarching theme.
Okay, and I'm always reluctant to talk about the possibility of expanding government spending, especially when it comes to family things. But as you said,
right,
if you're thinking about childcare as a necessity, if you're thinking about it as, you know, A, economic development of future laborers as they get prepared for school, and B, just, you know, being able to properly take care of young kids and give them a service as opposed to just kind of, you know, housing them for a couple of hours a day, you know, I see
right.
the value. You know, you start to see why this would be something that if it works somewhere else, maybe it can work here. Another big story in the news that's, you know, kind of over the last few days anyway, was we had the Fiesta Parade. And the Fiesta Parade, which is, you know, it's always a good parade, really low turnout this year. Very, very few. I mean, on Palafox was pretty busy, but elsewhere, and lots of people remarked to me how few people were in attendance. And you in your comments yesterday made the remark about the cost of providing security, especially post-New Orleans, which is more, and closing down streets and affecting businesses, you know, all of the costs that go into these parades. And I had several people make the comment to me that, you know, I wonder if it's financially viable to continue to do all the parades we do. Now, I don't want to be, and I know you don't want to be the guy that comes in and questions whether we should keep a parade going, but, you know, at some point, everything that costs money and produces a result, and you have to ask whether it's worth the money, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, since January 1, since New Orleans, we really have looked at this with a two-prong approach. Number one was the short-term security, which is what matters most, right? Like, how do we bolster whatever parade, whether there's one person that shows up or 1 million, how we bolster the security and the safety of everybody at these parades, which I'm very, very, very pleased with. We just had in Mardi Gras and at Fiesta the two most planned, prepared, calculated, you know, security plans and executions that we've ever had at any parade. I can guarantee that. And so I'm so proud of our team. And I told them that in the pre-event briefings in both. To say, man, you know, you guys are part of the best security solution and most thought out security solution that we've had. So we solved that issue so far. But the second prong is the long game, which is we've got to make decisions about, and I always give this perspective, in 2008 or 2009, the city manager at the time, before we were even a strong mayor format, before Ashton was mayor, there was a letter sent to every parade that said, hey, you know, we'll foot this bill this one last time, but now it's kind of on you. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And here we are 16 years later, not only is it not on those organizers, but it's only on the city. And that's the difficult part. Now, Sheriff Simmons was gracious. FHP has been gracious to give resources. So certainly there's some now costs to them, this new bolstered approach. But the vast majority of putting out barricades, police and fire, all of those things that just got even more expensive with additional security are at the feet of the city. And remember, if there's bed tax generated or anything like that, that's not going to the city. So, you know, I kind of think something needs to be done. And one of the conversations we've had is, do certain parades, do we come up long term with a different route that is more manageable, more cost effective, that if it's not going to be a lot of people, that that it can be accommodated on Bayfront Parkway, for example, you know, where you only have, now you got one side of the road to defend, not two. And so we're going to look at that. And I think the tipping point, Andrew, is going to be if we, when we get this Palafox reimagination going next year, we're going to have to probably move all the parades anyway. So it's going to kind of be a good test for us to see how those things work. But that is in the back of our mind with all of our police, all of our fire, all of our logistics folks right now is, do we split those up? Maybe only Mardi Gras is down Palafox, and then we do the other somewhere else. More to come, but we are definitely thinking about that because of the immense cost it is to put these on.
Okay, yeah, and I kind of like that approach of instead of just, you know, what we have now or cancel, what we have now possibly a scaled back or maybe find an alternate funding mechanism or both. Down to at the worst resort, we would have to maybe cut back on parades or cancel some. So, you know, I like that you guys are looking at that in some detail. We always like to, gosh, the time always goes so fast with you. I know you had the military symposium. I know a lot came from that. This Thursday for the Committee of the Whole, you're going to be there talking with the county about Baptist, and there's been a lot of fixation on the $2 million that they had previously said yes to and now seem to be kind of squishy about and, you know, what they're going to do. And I really liked your comments yesterday basically saying that, look, you know, every entity has to decide what makes sense to them. But certainly, you know, we hope that things will follow through the way we were expecting them to be, because that's kind of what we've been counting on all of this time. And a small note, but the pallet shelters, you have two entities that are now going to be rolling out. What, 27 of them? Is that right?
Yeah, at least 27. And then they're going to get it all designed and everything. And it's to accomplish the goal we wanted, which is let's solve a today problem today. Let's not wait for perfection on a low barrier shelter and a massive cost and all of that. But hey, we're gonna be able to get people housed, you know, as soon as possible, which is why we went that direction with the pallet. So very excited for that.
No, me too. And I love the low cost. I love the fact that it is, in a certain sense, it's a low barrier shelter for individualized, you know, housing, and again, at a relatively low cost, and it takes advantage of people who are already doing this work and just using their available space outside their buildings. I mean, all of it makes sense to me, so I like it. We always like to end with a little bit of a lightning round, quick questions. When you were a kid, what was the most adventurous, unsupervised thing that you did, if you can remember? What was the thing that, don't tell your daughter you did this yet, but you did as a kid that was maybe dangerous and risky and awesome?
Yeah, you're asking the story of what my parents let me do that I would never let Caroline do. Yeah,
exactly.
I know this one very well. When you go over my mom grew up in Perdido. When you go over the Intercoastal Bridge on the right, now it's all houses, with just this big, empty sand field. And it was one of those where we lived down there, and we'd leave the house at 8 a.m., and it was like, be back before dark. You know, no cell phones, nice. No nothing, you know, just running around, running amok. Like, I couldn't even imagine that now. But yeah, I think playing around, Waskey wasn't there. Perdido was pretty quiet back in those days. And so we'd just be running around in the woods and, you know, being fools out there. So
look at you being allowed to become an adult. Look at that. It's fascinating. Do you?
Exactly.
DC Reeves, journalist, trained journalist, sports writer. Do you use the semicolon?
Yes, I do. And actually, the Oxford comma, because of AP style, is a very big question for me.
Are you Oxford comma? Yes, I hope.
I tend to not use it because AP had for 12 years. You didn't.
Oh.
And so if you get an email from me, don't make fun of my grammar.
I'll
blame AP style.
I'll just say you're too young to know how to properly punctuate. And then the last one is we had a good conversation. Sheriff Chip Simmons is a big advocate for eating chicken nuggets. You also are an adult, not quite the same age as he or I am, but do you eat chicken nuggets as an adult?
Constantly. As a matter of fact, you know, when I go to the airport, you know, I'm in a compromising position to, you know, a lot of people want to come up and talk, which I love.
Yeah,
you know, and then you hear my voiceover, and then being in the corner, you know, eating chicken nuggets is not like the most mayoral thing to be doing. So, you know, I've got to be mindful of my surroundings.
I love it. Mayor T.C. Reeves, thanks for the time. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right. Thank you.
Very good. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you need any kind of work done on plumbing, air conditioning, heating, electrical, all of the kind of the complex systems inside your home, it makes sense. If you're going to work on one, you might as well figure out a way to work on any of them. And that's what Peden does. They can work on any of that stuff. So they are your comprehensive inside the house repair people. And look, they're professional. They show up on time. They do what they're supposed to do. They, you know, high quality products, reliable installation, 100% satisfaction guarantee. That's kind of their marketing concept, and that's what they do. And then that's why they've been growing for more than 55 years all along the Gulf Coast. You know, a couple of years ago, they started growing west, even across the Alabama border. They went into Baldwin County, and then they went into Mobile County last year, all the way east to Tallahassee. Of course, they've been in Pensacola and all parts in between for a long, long time. This month, during the month of June, we have $1,000 off a new air conditioning system. Obviously, it's getting a little bit warmer, and you want to stay cooler, and you want to get this taken care of before it gets into that really brutal summer of Florida that we all love so much. Get $1,000 off a new air conditioning system with special financing, and there are some restrictions that apply. Cool down during the month of June and every other month at Peden, PEADEN.com.
We Care Home Hotline, you're on with Woody.
Hey, Woody, have you ever heard an air conditioner this loud?
No, but the good news is WeCare has more than 10 years in business and thousands of positive reviews, so our HVAC, plumbing, and electrical teams can get it fixed and fast.
Thanks, Woody!
No one cares like WeCare. Schedule online at WeCareHeatAndAir.com.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli, where you can meet up and wine all you want. Costello's has all your barbecue needs ready for pickup, from Wagyu tomahawks, Wagyu chuck steaks, to quarter pound colossal Wagyu hot dogs, briskets, pork butts, and so much more. At Costello's, you'll find all the best boarhead sandwich meats and cheeses, plus everything ready from charcuterie boards to chicken salad and the best dessert pies, all at Costello's Butcher Shop, Deli, Fine Wine, and Cheeses. Find them today on the corner of Lillian Highway and Fairfield Drive in Pensacola.
Join Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola tomorrow at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Dr. Rebecca Gibbons will be here to answer your questions about the many benefits of acupuncture. If you suffer from chronic back pain, neuropathy, or joint pain, or even stress and anxiety, this is a show you will not want to miss. Tomorrow at 9, with Acupuncture and Wellness of Pensacola on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before pep talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You got to learn when to think like a lawyer, you understand? And when to think like a landowner. Well, a lawyer is all you're ever going to be.
Good morning, 5:58, News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
The U.S. Department of Education says the accreditation of Columbia University could be at risk. The department's Office for Civil Rights says it told the Middle States Commission on Higher Education that Columbia violated Title VI of the Civil Rights Act. Education Secretary Linda McMahon has issued a statement. She claims the university's leadership was indifferent to the harassment of Jewish students after the 2023 Hamas attack on Israel.
Yeah, this is a really interesting position for the education department to take, that Columbia, by depriving protection for Jewish students to get to their classes safely during the pro-Palestinian riots, uprisings, protests, deprived them of rights and should lose their certification. Sort of like, had there been Klan rallies going on campuses around the country and black students weren't able to get to their classes. That's basically the analog here. It's a very interesting criticism. Go ahead.
A federal judge blocking the deportation of the family of the man accused of committing a fire attack against a pro-Israel protest in Colorado. Yesterday, the U.S. District Judge issued a ruling barring the Trump administration from removing the wife and children of Mohammed Solomon. The judge says the deportation without process could cause irreparable harm.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Hey, coming up next, part two of a three-part miniseries. Days of Our Milton never disappoints. There are some meetings that are not that interesting. And there are other meetings in which I'm watching it thinking, oh my God, really? This was one of those meetings. So stick around, you'll hear why.